You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Carty, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his cypress knee, and he was talking to Moxie and Joe. Where the party they gonna have? Out in the St. John's swamps. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm top drawer, good friend. And I hope those same greetings go out to you and all the people out in Bigfoot world. You know,
well, thank you.
I got to tell you a story. We're getting ready here to embark on a pretty big and important expedition, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of keeping it under wraps, and we'll be departing here next week. And you people all around the globe will be hearing it and seeing it and the whole nine yards. I just want everybody to know that you're going to be seeing and hearing us live every week. We're going to do something. We're going to put something together where you guys can actually see us in the field. But this is going to be a big one. This is going to be a tornado. It's going to be a twister, folks. We're out there doing some stuff for you. You're going to see and hear things that you've never seen and heard before. And we're going to bring it to you. I'll guarantee you that. We're gonna bring it to you. First off, I want to do a couple of shout-outs. Chuck Creel's daddy, he's getting better. Him and Chuck both want to thank everybody for those wonderful prayers and everything else. And Leroy calls today and says that his aunt passed on, but she went without any pain, and she appreciated all those wonderful prayers that came in from everybody around the globe. I want to thank everybody from the bottom of my heart for that also. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go into a subject tonight that does my heart sad, and I'm going to tell you the reason why. I read an article last week. It was sent to me about 7-8 times about a fellow filmmaker, fellow researcher, fellow man that spent his hard-earned money, his time away from his family, came out with some pretty nice projects, which we'll discuss also here tonight. But what happened was he threw in the towel. And the reason why he threw in the towel, he was beat up. This is my opinion now, okay? We're going to get it from the horse's mouth, and we're going to talk about it. And when I tell you he was beat up, that, hey, man, when a guy takes his hard-earned money that he worked so hard to build, and to build a good product, and all of his time away from his family, and the next thing you find out, what he did wasn't in earnest. It was something that he was buffaloed. He puts it a little bit different. I didn't have a chance to ever meet this man, talk to him twice in my life. I wish to God he would have came and talked to me and a few of the other senior people in the industry that's been out there and been through what he's been through. You know, ladies and gentlemen, that you've heard me say it before. If you haven't been hoaxed in the Bigfoot field and have the tenure what we have, well, then you haven't been searching. Because you'll get nailed one, twice, three times, maybe four or five. Who knows? It's tough. It's not easy. I've been kind of blessed, though. And an old friend of mine, like a brother, he's going to be on the show with us, too, tonight. Where I'm going to have him on. Java Bob, you all know and love him. We're going to talk about that also. But without any further ado, let's get out there to Florida and talk to John L. Johnson. John, you there?
Go ahead, John.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear, John. Thank you, first of all, for coming away from your family tonight and sharing your story with us. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. What I said at the top of the hour and the top of this session was the truth. It when I saw those articles that came out after talking with you, it jerked at my heart because I felt bad. I got to be honest with you, all right? I really, really felt bad. But, you know, I've talked to many people, and they've called me, and they says, gee, Tom, is this the same guy that a few weeks ago that you had talked to, I guess, and he was down there in Land Between the Lakes and said, that, wow, how wonderful it was with these guys and everything else. I says, yeah. I says, but you know what? Sometimes people say enough is enough, and they can't take it no more. What actually happened, John? What's going on? Tell your story.
Well, the story is I retired in 2004 to make films. My son had graduated from college and had studied film and photography and went into media. He's got a successful business in New York now, a studio. And I wanted to make documentary films. We had some life-changing things going on about that time, and it was I just saw the writing on the wall and wanted to get out of earning a living. I'd been a freelance photographer and videographer for 30-plus years. I noticed at the time that people were making fun. There was a tendency for National Geographic and other places like that, Discovery Channel and whatnot, to show people researching Bigfoot in a kind of a jovial light, like they were stupid or you know, that they really didn't count, that no one could take him seriously. And then I had an encounter with a gentleman, and I'm going to tell you that, first of all, Tom, tonight, that I'm not going to be naming names. We talked privately, and you've heard some of the names from me. But I won't be naming names or specific locations. Let's just say that I was invited along on this guy's outing in Ocala in 2005. Found out that he was, in my opinion, taking advantage of these people. Was certainly taking a lot of money from them, although to his credit, he never asked me for money. I believe he originally thought of me as tech support, although I can't verify that either. So I, given all the ruckus on the Discovery and National Geographic and the way that I saw these people treated, I said, well, my first project to get back into the feel of this thing, because entering a new field, you got to pay your dues, I said, we'll be about people who make Bigfoot, and I'll show them, I'll show the everyday people, excuse me, like those that I met, who were not famous, and show what they do. So I started searching for people who could help me. Now, the only way, you know, I didn't know you existed, I didn't know anything. At this point, I thought the Patterson film was a hoax. You and I tend to disagree about that overall, but let's just say that I was a newbie, and I was a brand new baby out there. So I finally found a group that the moderator kind of took me under his wing, and he's gone now. He died a couple of years ago. But he sent me out to an area in Texas and said that this is where you should go. I know the people out there. And they were all in the same group. So I drove 1,200 miles to this venue in East Texas, a little town called Maydell. And the evidence that I saw there was impressive. There was the property owner who I know did not have the strength nor the height to get up 8 feet and twist 3-inch thick bamboo in the center of a bunch, twist one stalk and bend it over. I saw a lot of tracks. I saw what looked to be a nest. And I got a really interesting photo myself out of the trees around one of the little venues there. But the bottom line of that, now I had driven 1,200 miles to this woman's property. The bottom line was they didn't trust the guy who sent me out there. Therefore, I was a spy, and therefore they forbid me from filming anything on the property. So there I was. Welcome to Bigfooting. You are now a spy. Get the hell off my property. That was the first experience. I went on from there. I went down to Conroe to see what turned out to be Chester Moore Jr.'s last Bigfoot conference, and it was there that I met M.K. Davis. And the only reason I really wanted to meet M.K. at the time was because he had developed a method for stabilizing the Patterson-Gimlin film, and I just wanted to see what he was doing. So I figured I could use that, whatever software, and when I discovered what he was doing, I was very impressed with the man and have been ever since. He was using a standard off-the-shelf animated GIF program, and he was hand-stabilizing each one of the frames. Well, from then I went on to several other venues. I had mixed success with people. I mounted an expedition of my own in 2006 in the spring. Went up to see my son in Westchester County in New York. And then I took off through Pennsylvania, Missouri, Indiana, Iowa, Ohio, I'll get it right, down into Arkansas, all over. I bypassed Oklahoma. I had an invitation to go to Oklahoma, but I couldn't do it. I went down to see MK, and I did the interview that appeared in Keeping the Watch. Back across through Alabama, Mississippi, and then back down into Florida. But of all those places, Tom, I had appointments in nearly every state. I had three of them in Pennsylvania alone. And I traveled on whatever that interstate is that escapes me, that goes from the bisects Pennsylvania east to west. When I stopped to see these people, the first, I've only got footage, I've archived footage of the last one because I thought maybe one day something would come of it with him. But the first two were obviously, well, the first guy was drunk. He was obviously not telling me the truth. He was filthy dirty and lived what could only be described as a hole in the ground. The second guy was the very same way. And I thought to myself, this is just getting worse with every mile I put down on the car. Then I stopped with the third guy, and by the time I stopped at the other side of Pennsylvania, I had developed strep throat. I'd been there, my grandson had it, and Lord have mercy, I got strep throat, and I ended up at the hospital in that little city for treatment. But that guy was the same way. Filthy dirty. He was physically ill. He was a bit strange. He told me that he did no research except on the internet and that his website had been stolen from somebody else. So now it's getting serious. Now I've traveled all of these miles and I don't have anything. I went in to see somebody in Missouri. I got some interesting tape. I got I had a good interview with that woman. I went down to see MK. I stopped in Arkansas. I've been to Arkansas twice to see the person, and they declined to do what they promised to do. So bottom line was, when I got back to Florida, I only had three interviews that I could use out of all of that. And that was about 6,500 miles in nearly 3 weeks. Not discouraged, I went on to work with MK in a couple of his projects. I did a project with Barton Nunley in Lambie, where I encountered more people that really I couldn't believe. The whole beast of the land between the lakes, that whole story of the murders was false. You know that person, Tom, who made that. And then Barton, he tells me that, I did mention Barton because I still will work with Barton. He was a victim as well in this, but he got me in touch with Steve Cook, the owner at the time of the Gable film, who I sent him a contract to sign it off as being allowing us to use the original footage, and he would never ever send me the reel. He sent me a projected copy which contained all kinds of artifacts because of the it was simply videoed off a wall, and he altered my contract and then signed it, which voided it immediately. And we all know what became of the Gable film when Monster Quest exposed it and showed the guy in the ghillie suit and how he made the film. Then last year, I got in touch with a man that you know, who, through the advice of another guy that you know, who said, you will see something in the land between the lakes. So, in confidence, I went up there again. Hope springs eternal. And we had a beautiful moonlit night in October. I was catching fish right and left on the shore of the little bay. Full moon, a jet flew through the full moon. I'd never seen a contrail look like that. It was absolutely gorgeous night. He had told me that the night before he had been out there and that there was all kinds of mayhem coming up from on top of the hill above us and that it sounded like one of these things had gotten a hold of some coyotes. His wife was with him, and I asked her, I said, what did you hear? And she goes, oh, I just slept through everything. And I'm thinking, well, that's interesting. Well, she's sleeping in the tent, and we're down at the bayside, and he starts getting a little nervous and fooling around. And he keeps looking around and back and forth, and all of a sudden, out comes this yell. Now, if you know the way that place is created, Tom, you know, you've got the bays that run up in there, and you've got a good echo that'll come bounce back off those hills back over that water. And this yell sounded like it was standing right next to us. And about the same time, I thought I saw movement down at the end of the bay. And it freaked me out so bad that I left. I got scared to death. I told this guy, I said, I'm taking off. I knew where he lived, and I said, I'll come get you in the morning, and we'll come back and look for evidence. He left. He seemed to be scared. At least that's what he said he was. So we left. I went back to Catawba, stayed, and we got together the next day and came back to the site where he presented me with a casting that he had found the day before. Now, he hadn't mentioned anything about this casting, that he had cast this track that he said he had found a few days before. That and the yell, by the time I returned to Florida, and I really believed this guy, and part of my makeup is that if an adult tells me something, I tend to believe them until they give me some reason to disbelieve them. So when I got back to Florida, I was elated, and I began making plans right then and there to go back to the LDL to get this thing on tape, to get video of this. Now, I had invested a lot of money in advance. I upgraded my bought another HD camera, upgraded some other stuff, bought night vision, bought infrared illuminators, bought IR cameras, got myself together, got a parabolic microphone, upgraded the recorder, and I brought a couple of guys that you know from out west in there, and another guy up from Florida with me who had some experience and was ex-military and also had a thermal camera. We had thermal, we had night vision, we had IR, and so in the meantime, I had gone to see somebody who had some photographs they wanted me to look at, and they were trying to get me to invest in, and I know you've been in that situation. The investment started out at something around $100,000 because these photos were going to change the world. When I took a look at the photos, one of the things I saw immediately was a seam where the top portion of the suit lapped over the bottom portion of the suit, and the mask did not even match the rest of it. Then the idiot made the idiot in the suit made the mistake of sealing his fate by walking in front of the game cam. And when the flash went off, you could see where it was all one length of fur, not hair, and it was strawberry blonde. So it was either, I don't know, a gay Bigfoot or it was a guy in a suit. I tended to think it was a guy in a suit. I went back to the LBL where this gentleman, one of the gentlemen that I had been with the fall before, said, well, I knew you were going to miss something when you went up there to look at those pictures, man, because we had two females walk right through, almost through camp, and the old man of the forest is out there right now.
John, hold on. Let me, we got to go to commercial. We're going to go to commercial. On the other side of commercial, ladies and gentlemen, we'll find out about the female Bigfoot that he didn't get to see. Please bear with us. Marco, go to commercial.
Here we go.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmargen, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I can convince him I had to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, if you haven't seen them, Bigfoot Lives, Bigfoot Lives 2, The Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax, and The Shadow of Bigfoot, very different places you can get it, Amazon.com. You can always get them on our website, Searching for Bigfoot, Shopping for Bigfoot, right on the left. You go on to our main website. I got to tell you, we get accolade constantly. And it looks like we may win now for Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax, including Bigfoot Lives 2. Well, stay tuned for that. We're going to have more of that. This is an exciting story, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just joining us now, we have a guy, John L. Johnson, who's been spent a lot of his time, a lot of his hard-earned money, believing in the sincerity of a lot of the Bigfoot people. He's about ready, or he already has, throwing the towel because he's tired of the bullshit. I don't know what other way to put it. But let's get back to him right now. John, you there?
Yes, I am. And Tom, just to short this a bit, because I know I'm going over here, the bottom line is I was coached by this gentleman twice. I sent the casting off to Dr. Jeff Meldrum, who pronounced it a hoax. He said the thing is full of fingerprints and things where it's been made, and then the body of the cast has absolutely no dermal ridges. It was probably made by a shoe. Disappointed in that. And then I went just recently, returned from another venue. I was not hoaxed, okay? I was not hoaxed, and the people are sincere. We had absolutely no activity. I mean none. No activity. In an area that normally these people say is chock full of them. Now, I had to take a look at this. We had another incident up there, too. I brought a director, somebody who was going to act as a director for me in there. I wanted, primarily, we were going to look for evidence, not do interviews. I discussed interviews with this person, but I wanted evidence. And first of all, you know, I was paying this person's expenses. Just to put it mildly, we mixed like oil and water, and that furthered my disgust with the whole process. Now, the bottom line for me, Tom, is that it's been 6 years. It's been about 20K. It's been about 20 to 25,000 miles on vehicles. It's been probably a total of a year on the road away from my family, and we've got a family situation right now where we've got an elderly family member with us who's in her final days. And it's tough for me to get away. So after all of this, and also I've recently been bombarded by people on a couple of major blogs, shall we say. And again, I won't name names. You know of the action I'm taking. And I've ended up having to resort to legal action in a couple of things. So this whole genre of film has just soured for me. And I'm beginning to wonder, do I throw another dollar at this thing, or do I fold my tent and move on to something else? And essentially, I decided to fold my tent. So, and I ask you, can you blame me?
You know, I want to answer that question. And at this point in time, I want to bring a fellow Bigfoot researcher. How he got into the game was because of me. And he got to travel many, many miles. And I don't want it to hear it from my mouth. I want to hear it from his and tell you what we've encountered. Probably the same thing that you have, but we learned how to inferit the wheat from the shaft real quick. Jabba Bob, are you out there?
I sure am, Tom. And Jack, all I can tell you is don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You know, one of the lessons I learned the hard way and I wrote about it in my book, Monsters, Myths, and Me. Tom would warn me about it, but we got to see it. And there's so much stuff out there that is just make-believe. These people, a lot of them spend a lot of time on blogs. So they've all been around so long, people look at them as experts, and they've never really done any real research in their lives. Most of the things, you talked about you went 25,000 miles. When I was working with Tom, we'd go 120,000 miles a year. Did that for 5 years, you know. So we spent a lot more than $25,000, I can tell you that. And probably the lion's share of all of the sightings that we investigated, we could find no evidence or anything to support what was going on there. But occasionally we did. Occasionally we did find things that we could support with physical evidence, and that's what made it worthwhile. The rest of it you had to learn to toughen up. Now, Tom would do something like he would take only a few minutes to determine whether or not a story he was hearing or something was real or not. And so you could always tell if he was talking to someone and they were giving him a story, and he would say, "Well, excuse me, I'll send you over to Bob. He'd explain to Bob what was going on," and he would walk away. And that was our cue that probably there was something not right there. And, it's not you. Don't personalize this whatsoever. This is just part of this genre. And I refer to it as a tapestry. This whole story is a big tapestry. It's a huge picture. Most of it is just a picture. And what you have to do is unweave it and pull the threads of truth out of it, and then reweave the tapestry out of those threads of truth, or you'll never get to the bottom of it. So,
Bob, the problem I had was that the very first time I went out, my first location scouting out to Texas, there was evidence there. And mm-hmm. I was excited. I mean, I was excited about that. But the politics of the so-called Bigfoot groups kept me from doing what I was out there to do. Essentially, that was a pro-kill group. They were trying to kill one, and there was this little breakaway faction. I mean, it sounds like bad politics out in a bush country someplace, where this little breakaway faction was going to kill one first, and they thought I was there to spy on them, and therefore, that's it. They were done with me.
Oh, yeah, that's it. The whole genre is rife with that now. Did you hear on the little commercial that they played for Bigfoot Lives? There was a guy there talking about, he said, I thought that in this day and age it would have had the technology exists to find one of these things. That was a reporter who came out there with it. Now, he saw this thing himself. There was no way to fake anything. He actually saw it. We all saw it that evening. And he got in front of his own camera and said what you heard him say. And all he said is that he's going to have to rethink his skepticism after what he'd seen that night. And did you know he was sanctioned and wasn't allowed back on the air for almost a year? Because the last thing a major news organization wanted was one of their reporters saying he saw Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah, yep. I can understand that. It's like a pilot seeing a UFO.
Yeah, it's just insane. And it takes a long time. Like, you hear Tom say very often, he has broad shoulders. You know, he can take it. And he's been through every form of this you can imagine. And I've been fortunate enough to be very close to him. Tom and I don't work together any longer. But I got to tell you, when we were working together, we were like brothers, you know. And of course, we may still do something in the future, but right now we're just we're both doing our own things. But I got to tell you, there's a man who's been through it all. I the first time I went out in the field with Tom was in Nevada. They called that the Stagecoach incident, and they labeled him as a hoaxer. And I was there, and I saw every bit of what went on. And I can tell you from firsthand, never did he hoax a thing. And he decided to just let it ride and let it go, and he did. And now, when the thing happened in Georgia, these people come out of the woodwork again and said, see, he did it then, he's doing it again. You know,
yeah.
And I'm intimately involved with both of those things, and I've been with Tom. We spent literally months together in the cab of a truck traveling this country. I've never in my life seen him hoax anything at all. And yet he's got that reputation out there because these bloggers come in and they give you their opinion, and they may have never been in the field in their lives, but they batter it back and forth. They find something to jump on, and they do. It's bizarre.
I've seen Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax, and I think I told Tom I thought it was a little long, but that's just my opinion. Otherwise, it was well-produced, excellent videography and editing, and it tells the story. When you see them pull, well, you, it was you, I guess, and J.C., or pulling that beheaded pig's carcass out of that suit, Lord have mercy, man. These guys from Georgia, they were sick. I mean, it was a sick hoax the way it was done.
Absolutely. And, you know, we never did figure out what their end game was. We don't know what that was all about. I don't know if you noticed it, but in that movie, Phil Lett said, and they told me, you know, when they found out that he's the one that they signed the thing over to.
Right.
When they found that out, they said, you know, you cost us $500,000. And nobody has a clue what that was about.
Hmm.
None of us ever figured that out. But there was something going on there. I think they probably, I think what happened, this is a guess, I think what happened is they picked Tom because they read all this stuff about him, must be a hoaxer and this and that, thought that once he found out what was going on, he'd play along with it long enough for them to hang him out to dry or whatever they were going to do. What they didn't expect is when we found out what was going on and Tom said, thaw it out, let's get in there, when we told him what our doubts were.
Right.
And we got in there and found it, and the first thing we did was call the same people that Tom called when they thought they had the real deal, Fox News. And they didn't expect that. I don't think they expected that at all. But that's what happened, and you think that was a long movie. You should have lived through the real life part of it. That was the longest few weeks of my life.
It really says something about the honesty about you calling the news organization back and selling them, hey, you know, it's a hoax. You know, I felt bad for you guys at that point, but when you got the thing thawed out, and all of these dead animal parts, the cow or horse jaw, whatever it was, the pig that I think JC said this was not slaughterhouse job. This is backyard chainsaw stuff.
There was more than one pig in there. There were some parts that were actually stamped with, you know, USD kind of inspection stamps. But the one main body that we found in there was not. It was not it's not when they went to a slaughterhouse and bought it. This was probably, like TJ said in one of the lines there, this might have been somebody's pet. And if you're missing your pet, call PETA.
Yeah, it was bizarre. I was very impressed with the production, and for people who think that the bloggers and the message boards have this stuff right, they need to see that film, if nothing else.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, John, and that comes from my heart, believe me, and I'm sure it does from Java Bob. I want to say one thing. You know, Bob says it so adequately and so articulately. That's what happens when you got a high IQ. I'm just from the streets of Brooklyn, but I learned a lot from Bob, too. I really have. But I'm telling you this. I think you might want to just take another look at before you throw in the towel, and that there are a lot of good people out there. But I think the purpose for this show was to prove to you that you weren't the only one. we were bullshitted, we were buffaloed, and we went throughout down that same road, except we got our lesson many, many years ago. I happened to be blessed a lot of times that I could tell within a matter of minutes. You can't tell over the phone, and you found that out yourself.
Oh, yeah.
and through emails. You think that these guys are the greatest thing since sliced bread, and oh, my God, at the grass is greener on the other side, and we're going to run across a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Well, Bob will tell you, like he said earlier, when I used to TO the subject person or the associate we went out to see to him within 5 minutes, he knew right away that I could sense that this was another bleazank, a blank wall, okay? We got to move on to our next subject matter. And for those fellow researchers, for those naysayers, for those envious Bigfoot researchers and Bigfoot hunters out there, I want you to understand something. You're right. Tom Biscardi doesn't stay in one hot spot more than a half a day or a day because he knows what there's nothing there. But if you find Tom Biscardi camping out, look out. You know something's going on. Is that correct, Bob?
That's absolutely correct. We would go and we'd look, and even if we found some physical evidence, if it wasn't fresh, if it wasn't new, we'd move on to the next one because we were serious. We wanted to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt with good, hard evidence that this thing exists. I mean, we all seen enough evidence, physical evidence ourselves, to know it's out there and know that it requires more legitimate study. But we have to cut through all the bullshit first. And it's expensive to be out there, you know. And when Tom went, he was paying for a whole crew, all the expenses for the crew, all the transportation and motels if needed. And, if you just spend an extra 2 or 3 days, that's a couple of grand out of his pocket. And couldn't do it. So we were only interested in the real meat. And it was just the scent of gravy. It wasn't enough to keep us there.
Very well said.
I understand that. I've been there with the extra dollars and I do want to camp out in these places, but I think that if I do go back at this, I'm going to do a few day trips and I'm going to sample what's out there and then I'm going to come back and we're going to stay. And I may ask some of the people from my past to join me. But I tell you, it's not going to be this, I'm not going to take anybody's word for anything. You know, I told you, the one guy I saved the footage on from Pennsylvania, talked to him on the phone, and he had a good story, he had a good personality, and that was the guy where, I think I told you, Tom, that when I put put my video tripod back in the Jeep, there was cat shit on the bottom of it because I put the thing in a cat box. That was overloaded. I mean, the whole house smelled like it. You couldn't tell where it was coming from, but I found it. One leg of my tripod found it. No more of that. There's not going to be any more of that.
Well, listen, Donnie, I hope that maybe we cleared the air a little bit about the other people out in this industry. And you already know that there's very, 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 very few real Bigfoot researchers / hunters out there. You found that out the hard way. I just want to tell you this. In the near future, if you ever need any help, give us a call. We're there for you.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate that. May do that.
And in the next couple of weeks when we're down there in Florida, we'll give you a jingle and we'll buy you a cup of Joe.
That would be great. It'd be good to see you.
God bless you. And listen, the best for that situation at home, too, by the way. We've been praying.
Yeah, working towards a conclusion here, I think, but I appreciate your thoughts on that.
Thanks for coming. Just mute yourself.
If there's anything I can do, I'm here, too.
Thank you. Thank you, Bobby. Appreciate it. Couldn't have said it any better. As always, you always come through, and the truth will always prevail. Thanks, Bobby. Just mute yourself out.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. You have a good one.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Let's go to another commercial there, Marco.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery. And deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were in the law.
Back to you, Tom.
You heard about it. They talked about it tonight, ladies and gentlemen. The Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. You haven't seen it? See it. It'll answer all the questions you have. Got to get back here to our guest. My good buddy, been on expedition with me, Jim Dawson out in Arkansas. You out there?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I have a feeling you're on speaker. If you are, you should shut it off because you're going to get feedback.
No, I'm not on speaker. I just took it off speaker.
Oh, that boy, I'm proud of you. All right.
Is it a little better? I just moved away from my computer. I don't have the sound on, but is it all right now?
Hey, loud and clear, brother. Tell me, you know, this bit about with these railroad spikes 20 years old and the things that you left out for these creatures and they left things back, tell my audience.
Well, it's really unusual. This started back in late June, early July. In mid-July, you and I and Rob and the rest of us went out to Vermont on the expedition. We had a great time. It was a wonderful experience. And I shared with Rebecca, my girlfriend, who is very skeptical about Bigfoot to a large degree, about tree formations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, stick structures and the signs that you look for. And, you know, we kind of travel around a lot in tunnel vision. You know, we drive up and down roads, and we don't really look around when we drive. And she just happens to, we live 3.5-4 miles down a gravel road to get down to our place on the river, and we live on a completely spring-fed river in northeast Arkansas. And she started noticing a lot of tree arches and breaks, et cetera, and pointed them out to me. And right around our house, I mean, within 2 or 3, 4 miles of our house, on several different roads, there's a junction of roads in that area. And so we really started kind of investigating that. And then as my son and I were riding the four-wheeler around the house, there's a creek that runs right into the river right near our house, within 100 yards. But it's kind of back away, and we don't really go back in that area very often. And my son and I were walking around back in there, and I started finding footprints, but there were no toes. So I'd find 18, 20-inch footprints or tracks, but it's been so dry here all summer. It's just loamy soil, so you really don't find any toes. So I'm not sure if it's a creature's tracks or what it is, but there's a lot of arches and breaks and twists, et cetera. And you know, this is just such a perfect area for a large creature to survive with all the game. We have a lot of deer and turkey, and the river's full of trout and walleye, crappie, catfish. And I live in a subdivision of sorts, but it's all vacation homes. And so the folks that have homes in here, in fact, all the owners are all like me. We're all second generations. The homes have been here for 30, 40 years. And everyone comes in maybe 2 or 3 times a year. At different times. You never know when our neighbors are going to be here, but they're only here 2, 3, maybe 4 or 5 times a year and just for a couple of days. And so it's mostly uninhabited out here. And so Jack and I were riding the four-wheeler around. We start finding tracks. We start finding tree arches and breaks. And we've had some ice storms here in North Arkansas over the last couple of years, so it's very hard to distinguish whether a break or an arch is from the ice storm or a creature's making. I mean, you can't tell, but we started noticing a lot of them. And then about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Jack and I were out playing around the woods, and my son has a disability, he has autism, so we're out playing around the woods. He likes dad time with me. And we made 2 very large tree formations ourselves just to see what would happen. And a couple of days later, I went back out there, and they were torn away. They were gone, and the dead branches were 8-9 feet long that I had made them with, a big X and then an asterisk, if you would, in a tree. It was all torn away, and the limbs that I'd made it with weren't anywhere around there. It's kind of a rocky area. There's some glades with some cedars, et cetera, in there, and they were all gone. And then as we were walking back across the creek bed, and it's a seasonal creek, there's a little water in there from time to time, but it's a seasonal creek, I looked down, and we've walked across this same area. It's one area that you can cross and go under the railroad tracks through a concrete tunnel, if you would. There was, this is about 2 weeks ago, there was 19, I said in the last show there were more than that, but I was incorrect. I went back and counted them. There were 19 railroad spikes, old spikes that you drive into wooden ties, and there were several of the new type pieces of metal that they hold rails down with. Now, and on the railroads here, they all follow the rivers. They use concrete railroad ties with these metal clamps, if you would, to hold the rails down. And there were three or four of those metal clamps, but there were 19 spikes and three or four threaded pieces of steel, but they were all in one bunch laying right in the area where we walked through. So these X formations that we had made were torn down, and then there were these large, and then there's this large group of railroad spikes. And we haven't seen a railroad spike out here in 15 to 20 years. They have been used at least in that long. And especially for that many to be in one place in an area that we walk through all the time. I mean, it's possible we walk through there, you know, 10 times and didn't see them, but it's highly unlikely. They were just all in one place at the same time. And then we went down by the river. We made another X formation at a set of falls where I believe it's right by a highline wire. There's a big highline wire that runs across the river that provides power to all the folks out in this area of rural Arkansas. And right off of the highline wire on a set of falls where you could just walk nearly all the way across the river, we put up another big X formation against a tree. That was also missing. And it had only been a couple of days since we put it up, and I thought it was really weird. And we're past, this happened after Labor Day. And so we're past the season of people canoeing, coming up here. There hasn't been anyone up here, and none of our neighbors are in. They haven't been in. There's no one out here fishing. In fact, I'm the only one that lives out here year-round. And so those were gone. We had the railroad spikes. And then back over in front of our dock, I hadn't walked down to the dock in a couple of days. I've somehow or another acquired a staph infection, and I'm on an antibiotic that I can't get out in the sun. Fortunately, I've gotten over that staph infection, and I'm off the antibiotic. But the antibiotic wouldn't allow me to get out in the sun because, you get sunburned really easily. So I had to stay out of the sun for a couple of days. I walked down in front of my dock, and there was a big X formation on the ground. And I say big, it was two pieces of wood, about 3 feet, maybe 3.5 foot, right in front of my dock that no one put up there. My son didn't go down and put it out there. No one put it out there. It was right in front of my dock. And before I had a chance to take a picture of it with my camera phone, my son picked up the wood and threw it in the bonfire area. We always throw the extra sticks and limbs and all that fall out of trees from storms, et cetera, in an area where we burn a bonfire. We get a bunch of kids out here, and we build a fire for them when we're playing, and they really like that. And so he had thrown that over there, so I didn't get an opportunity to take a picture of it. In the meantime, after I found the railroad spikes, I decided, well, they're trading something with me possibly.
Okay, so let me stop you right there.
Okay.
I'm really late into the show. We're going to continue this. Remember what he said, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe he's there. The creatures are trying to trade with him. Just mute yourself out. Everybody's been wanting to hear Jack from the East Coast. We'll have you on next week live with me because you know I'll be there with you. Okay?
Oh, sure.
All right. Mute yourself out. It's an interesting story, but I'm running late. But I know you'll understand, but we'll talk about this because we'll show those spikes next week to all of our viewers. Thank you,
buddy. Absolutely. Great. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Dawson, he'll be with us next week. You'll see him. You'll hear him. Without any further ado, I want to get Jack from the East Coast. Jack, you there?
Hey, Tom. Hey, Marco, Bill. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, thank you for being so patient, as usual. As usual. You know, it just runs into overtime. You got.
You know what you should have done? Just continued on with that guest, and then I would be on next week, you know? I was fascinated by his story. I wanted to keep hearing it.
I know. Listen, I got to tell everybody out there, first of all, we've been getting a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails about Jack from the East Coast, about his wonderful vocalizations, and there was one guy that, I don't have his name right now at the top of my lips, but or tongue, but passed on some other barred owl sounds and stuff like this. He's become a local personality with us now, Jack has, and we're going to be seeing him next week sometime, ladies and gentlemen. So you're going to be hearing from him live out in the field. Tell us some more. What are you going to tell? You got 3 minutes. Tell us everything.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I can get through one story in 3 minutes. How about I entertain some questions from you or the chat room?
Okay, well, I'm not in the chat room, but here goes a few questions from me to you, okay?
All right.
I know that you're out researching on a daily basis. How are things going?
Well, throughout the spring and the summer, I haven't done nearly what I've been doing the past 4 years, but I go out on what I call the deer trail in the backyard woods every day. So I look at the trees, I look at what's changed, and I was sharing before that we had some trees that came down, quite a few, and they're big trees that came down across the deer trail. There's an outer loop and there's an inner loop, and then the outer loop continues on. Well, right where the inner loop and the outer loop meet, a bunch of pine trees, large pine trees, like foot in diameter, 30, 40, 50 feet tall, and they got snapped in half, you know, 10, 12 feet up. And they just so happened to go right across the trail where you block it from two different points. So you cut off the inner loop and cut off the outer loop. And so many times this has happened to me over the years, and I have gone back to where the chainsaw cut them up. Well, this time I decided to reroute the trail around these things so that I wouldn't destroy all the evidence. So when you come out, you'll be able to see those. But the interesting thing is all these trees came down when there were no storms, and it happened while I was on a vacation for 1 week. I was out of town. And the only other guy that spends a lot of time out there with his boys riding motorbikes, he was out for a month. So, I mean, curious that all these trees came down right during that time. And then afterwards, we had two big storms come through, three big storms, actually, a severe thunderstorm, and then we had... Hurricane Irene, and then Tropical Storm Lee passed through with high winds, lots of rain, and then ever since then, it seems like it's been raining every day too. But no other trees are coming down anywhere in the woods during all these storms that we've been having. But when it was nice and calm and I was out of town, you know, all these trees happened to come down. I did find footprints at that time. I made a casting of a small one, and I ended up breaking a casting of a larger one. But since then, the day after me and the other guy cleared out the new trail, two trees came down. And I even told him, you know, and I shared for the first time I ever shared this with any other neighbors, I shared with him that, you know, what's going on back here. And then I told him what I believe, and I think he thinks I'm half crazy, but he half believes me, too, because I took him around and showed him the evidence. Well, I said, you watch. After we clear all these out, in a few days, we're going to see some more trees come down. And he's kind of looking at me Google-eyed like I'm crazy. But then the next day, three trees came down. Well, two and a half. Two trees came down. Another one halfway came down, didn't make it to the ground. So I had to clear them out. And then since then, another tree has come down on the trail. So, you know, it's still active.
That's great. That's great. You know what, ladies and gentlemen? You're going to be hearing from him live from the field next week, when we're out there visiting him.
I'm looking forward to it, Tom.
I want to thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I want to thank you. I want to thank Java Bob. I want to thank Jim Dawson. I want to thank our main major guest, John L. Johnson. I hope he finds what he's looking for. Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pact that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination.